Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama, Daf Chof Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Take note, today's shiur will begin 9 lines from the bottom of Daf Chof Ches Omid Beis. Our shiur for Daf Chof Tes begins 8 lines from the bottom of the Daf Chof Ches Omid Beis. We open with a quote from the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'miskaving chayov. We glance at the side of the Gemara. We have a nosei, a topic heading, and it reads as follows: Hesber Shitas Rabbi Yehuda b'Mishnah. We're here to explain the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that appeared in the Mishnah at the bottom of Chof Ches Omid Aleph. The Omar b'inyan Nishbara Kadoi, regarding the scenario featured in the Mishnah of one's utensil breaking in a public domain. De'i b'miskaven chayov eino miskaven poter. Rabbi Yehuda made a distinction between intent, if there is intent, and we're not explaining right now what we mean by intent, because as the Mishnah is, it's quite vague, and we have to let the Gemara develop the idea. But in the meantime, we saw in the Mishnah he used the expression, if there is intent, then there is obligation to compensate. If there is eino miskaven, if there's lack of intent, potter, then there's exemption. And now we turn to the Gemara. Hechi domi miskaven. What is meant by intent? Omar Rabba b'miskaven lahorida lamata miksefo. A person had a jug of water on his shoulder, and he intended to lower it from his shoulder, and in doing so, the jug broke. And as you saw in the Mishnah, someone then slipped on the water or got hurt on one of the shards. But the issue of intent, according to Rabba, you can see we've underlined his name and indicated number 1. There's another explanation that will appear on Chof Tes Omid Aleph. But in the meantime, Rabba talks about intent to lower it from your shoulder. Omar Le Abaye. Now, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda appeared after the Tana Kamma. The Tana Kamma means the first opinion. The first opinion, you don't see a name, but most often when no name appears and there is an initial opinion in the Mishnah but no name accompanying it, you can assume it's Rabbi Meir. So that if Rabbi Yehuda expresses a distinction, leaving room for leniency in the case of Eino Miskaven, and the first opinion just said Chayav, across the boards, an unqualified guilt, obligation to compensate, so then that leaves us to think, as Abaye asks, Omar Le Abaye, Abaye asks Rabba, Michlal de Mechayev Rebbe Meir Afilu Nifshira, are you suggesting that Rebbe Meir, who is the first opinion in the Mishnah, who does not make a distinction between intentional lowering of jug versus unintentional, that Rebbe Meir, who makes no distinction, would say afilu nifshura, even if it slipped off nifshura? Let's give a little more detailed explanation, more accurate explanation of nifshura. Rashi says afilu nifshura nimocha hakad me'atzma al ksefo davi oines. Nifshura has to do with melting away. The jug on its own simply slipped off his shoulder, which is a case of onus, something that's totally unanticipated, something totally unexpected. Would Rabbi Meir say that in a case like that, the owner of that jug is culpable? And what does Rabba answer? Amale in, yes, Mechayev Ayurabi Meir Filu Ozno Biado. Even if the person was, let's say, supporting the jug by holding the handle of the jug, and in, while holding the handle of the jug, the utensil, the jug itself, became detached, some kind of, we'll say, faulty manufacture in the first place, and you're left with holding the, you're left with just the jug handle in your hand, and the thing slipped off on its own, came detached from the handle and smashed on the ground. That right there is Rabbi Meir gonna say? Is he saying that that's chayev? And yes, and that's what Rabba's saying here. Yeah, Rabbi Meir's mechayev. Even ozno is the jug handle. Biado is still in your hand. Well, the Gemara asks, really? And here we have, note, a long question. The long question, I want to point out ahead of time, by way of markings, most of it is in a brackets. And the reason for this is that the basic question is very short. And watch, the Gemara asks, Amai, why should such circumstances lead to guilt on the part of the jug owner? Onus who? He is now the victim of something beyond his control. The onus, rachmona patre, and things like that, things that are totally unexpected, something beyond your control, that rachmona means the Torah patre exempts you. That's the question. You're exempt. And in the bracketed section, what the Gemara does is gives you the background for that concept, that ones rachmona patre. That being said, if you skip ahead till the Gemara after the brackets, you notice Elo Omar Abaye. Then Abaye comes in with his explanation of the Mishnah, because up till now, all we've heard is Rabba's explanation of Rabbi Yehuda, and then from Rabba's explanation, we were given to understand what Rabba's opinion of Rabbi Meir would be. But that explanation runs into this difficulty, because according to Rabba's explanation, Rabbi Meir is holding you responsible even for a case of onus, where the falling of the jug resulted from something beyond your control. You did everything in your powers to be responsible. You were holding the jug by its handles. How else would you hold a jug anyway? And the handle became detached from the jug. And yet Rabbi Meir, according to Rabba, holds you responsible. And that cannot be. Why? Because of ones, rachmona patre. Now, we continue in the Gemara in the bracketed section, which gives you the background for that concept. Dichtiv, the Torah says, V'lenaro lo isase dovar. That posuk is in the context of a betrothed maiden. And she was raped. And the Torah says that some man came along and raped this Nara Hamurasa. He who did that is guilty of a death penalty. But the girl who was screaming to save herself and no one helped her, Lenara lo sasa davar, don't do anything to her. She was raped, was beyond her control. If you want to say hani milinin katla, when it comes to capital offenses, there we say oines rachmona patre avleinin nizikin chayov. But regarding laws of financial restitution, it was a result of damages. That's nizikin damages chayov. You are responsible even in a case of ones, but that's not so either. V'ha tanya, we have a Brisa, another Tanaic source, and you will see at the end of this Tanaic source, which appears on Chof Tesalman Aleph, five lines from the top, where the source describes Beruach Sheina Metzia, something falling and causing damage as a result of some storm velocity wind, an unusual wind, something you would not expect. And as a result, a vessel fell off and caused damage. You're exempt. So you see that in the realm of laws of damage, laws of restitution, you are exempt in the case of ones. And now let's go through the entire source. Nishvara kadoi velo silkoi. Someone's jug broke and the owner did not remove it. Left the pieces right there in the street. Nofal gemaloi velo hemidoi. Person's camel fell and he didn't stand it up. Rabbi Meir mechayev bezekon. Rabbi Meir says that the owner of these articles is chayev, is duty bound to make restitution in the case that they cause damage. V'chachomim omrim. We continue now at the top of Daf Choftes. Potur midine odom v'chayav bedine shamayim. The Chachomim say that in a court of law you will be exempt, but in heaven's eyes you are culpable. Umoidim chachomim l'Rabbi Meir. The Chachomim will concede to Rabbi Meir. Biavno sakino maso shenichon beroish gagoi. A person had a stone, a knife, or a package that he left at the top of a roof. Venoflu beruach mitsuya veziko, and they fell off in the course of a normal strength wind and caused damage. Shehu chayav, that the owner of those items is obligated to compensate. Umoide Rabbi Meir l'Rabbanan. Rabbi Meir will concede to the Rabbanan. B'male kankane mal gag amanas l'nagvon. A person brought up to his roof some jugs for the purpose of their nagvon is to dry out. They wanted them exposed to direct sunlight, we'll say, in order to dry out. V'noflu beruach she'ena mitzuya, and they fell off as a result of some type of very high velocity wind, something unexpected, vehiziko, and they cause damage. Shehu potter, that the owner will be exempt. Why? And take note, this is Rebbe Meir's shita, and we had been discussing Rebbe Meir before, whereas Rabba said that Rebbe Meir would hold you responsible for oinus, but here you have a Tanaic source where Rebbe Meir exempts you for a case of oness in Nezikin. Well, that brings us back to the drawing board. We want to be able to understand Reb Yehuda and Memela and additionally the Tanakama, Rebbe Meir, in our Mishnah. What were they arguing about? What was the point of controversy between them? So, Elo Omar Abaye. Abaye then gives us his take on things. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading. Hizik b'sh'as tefila, damage caused as in the course of falling. The analysis will involve the issue of im niskal poshehu, of a person who trips. Person walking along, carrying something like a jug on his shoulder. As walking along, he trips and falls, and in the course of the falling causes damage. That's an issue. Do we view tripping as poshea? Poshea means an act of irresponsibility, of negligence. Or, no, we would view it as something beyond your control, an onus. If you view niskal as poshea, so you're going to hold the owner of the item that caused damage guilty and obligated to make restitution. Hizik achar nefila. Then we're going to discuss the issue of damage that results after the fall. Ma dino shel mafkir nezokov. What is the din that would apply to someone who declares unowned, who renounces ownership of his items that eventually cause damage? So that we noted as an introduction to this Gemara. Let's continue now in the text. Elo Omar Abaye, Betarti Pligi, the Tanakama of our Mishnah and Rabbi Yehuda. They argue regarding two points. Pligi b'shas nefila u pligi la'achar nefila. They argue concerning damages that happen at the time of the falling, and they argue about damages that result after the falling, where someone got hurt, let us say, on a shard that came into existence as a result of the jug smashing, and hence the case of being damaged by a shard is an issue of damage after the fall. And now the Gemara goes over these points. Pligi b'shas nefila, they argue concerning damage that happens as the fall takes place. B'niskal poshea, the issue between them, that the point of analysis over which they argue is called niskal poshea. Niskal means tripping over something. Are you viewed as a poshea, as someone who was negligent? Mor sovar niskal poshea hu. The Rebbe Meir, who said chayav, holds that niskal is poshea, that one who trips was acting in sheer negligence, and therefore in the Mishnah you saw him say chayav. Umor sovar niskal lav poshea hu. And Rebbe Yehuda would say not so, that niskal, tripping over something and falling, is not called poshea. Pligi la'achar nefila. They argue also concerning damage that happens after the fall. And what's the issue? B'mafkir nezokov. The issue concerns someone who renounces ownership of the item that will be causing the damage in the course of time. Something that you owned, it fell, and you left it there, and you renounced ownership of it. Mor sovar mafkir nezokov chayav. The Tanakama will hold, that's Rebbe Meir, will hold that one who declares, who renounces ownership of something, so even though you renounced ownership of it, you still are chayav to compensate if damage results. And here we look at let's study Rashi together. Rashi introduces very, very basic points concerning the issue of what we call bor. We've mentioned this in our previous year, and bor literally is a pit. A pit is the archetype of something that causes falling. We've seen already numerous additional examples of what we call toldos of bor. The case of the stone, the knife, the package over which people trip, those are all derived from bor. So it's important, it's incumbent upon us to understand what is the Torah's conception of bor. What are the attributes of bor as far as the Torah is concerned? That sounds, I know, a little bit abstract, but by presenting the analysis, concerning this machlokas between Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda, it'll become much clearer what we mean by what constitutes, what are the attributes of an item that would categorize it as bor. And I want to emphasize that very point is a subject of great controversy. Rashi helps elucidate this matter. Rashi, that we'll look at together on the fourth line from the top, b'mafkir nezokov kagon zeh, like this case, someone tripped holding a jug, smashed on the ground, the mistama mafkir lecharosov, you can assume he will renounce ownership of the shards, the pieces, the fragments of clay that once formed his jug. The Rebbe Meir Sova, Rebbe Meir is the Tanakam in the Mishnah, who is the more stringent opinion, holds mafkir nezokov chayav. Though one renounced ownership of the shards, he nevertheless is duty bound to make restitution in the case that someone got hurt as a result. The bor shechayv lof Torah, bebor b'shus harabim, the hefker hu chayva. The bor of the Torah, according to Rebbe Meir, is a pit dug in a public thoroughfare. A pit dug in a public thoroughfare obviously is not something that you own. You may have dug it, but you don't own it. And that's what the Torah holds you responsible for, so that even though something is unowned, that does not exonerate someone from the obligation of offering restitution in the event that damage ensues. For Rabbi Yehuda Sovar, Rabbi Yehuda who disagrees, Potter, one is exempt for damage that happens as a result of falling on the shard. Why? Rabbi Yehuda holds that the bor of the Torah is something totally different than one who digs a pit in a public thoroughfare. The bor of the Torah that the Torah holds in Sefer Shmos, where it introduces the damage of bor, speaks about, according to Rabbi Yehuda, speaks about someone who, in the privacy of his own property, dug a bor and then declared the surrounding property unowned, renounced ownership of the surrounding property, thereby enabling the public to traverse that area while maintaining ownership of a pit that he had dug while the domain was his own. So you have a man that has his own private domain, digs a pit in his own private domain, renounces ownership of the surrounding area, while maintaining ownership of the pit. Rashi goes on to zeo bor mubatorah. That is the bor of the Torah. L'kamen pligi Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Kiva bar Milson later. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Kiva argue over this matter. V'hachi komar Rabbi Yehuda. Now, what Rashi does is what we didn't really see in the Gemara. Rashi reads the Mishnah through the eyes of Rabbi Yehuda. What did Rabbi Yehuda mean in the Mishnah? Thusly meant Rabbi Yehuda. B'miskaven l'shovra. The person, the owner, had intent to break it, to break that jug. V'hizik b'nefila. And as the falling took place, it caused damage. Chayav, he has to pay. Ubashain miskaven el miskaven lo rida miksefu niskaven ishbara potter. However, in a case where he didn't have intent to break it, he had intent simply to lower it from his shoulder, and as he was walking, he tripped and the jug broke. He's exempt. Diniska laposheu, for tripping, you're not considered having acted irresponsibly. As far as damage that happens after it falls, what element of intent could be applied there? So that will be described later. So now, we turn back to the Gemara. We mentioned already that they, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, argue not only in the case of damage that happens at the time of falling, but damage that results after the fall, after the jug fell and smashed, and their argument concerned Mafkir Nezokov. We're continuing in the Gemara text, Mor Sovar Mafkir Nezokov Chayav, the Rabbi Meir holds that renouncing ownership of your item does not exonerate you from needing to make restitution. Mor Sovar Potter, and Rabbi Yehuda says that you are exempt for damage that happens from items that you renounced ownership over. Umimai, and how do we know this? How do we know that they're arguing on two topics? How do we know that they're arguing concerning damage that happens at the time of the fall, or damage that happens later after the item fell? So how do we know it? Midekotoni tarti, from the fact that the Mishnah itself gave two examples. The Mishnah said, "Uchluk echad b'mayim." Someone from the public slipped on the water. Oy shaloka b'charosis, or got hurt on a shard. Hainu hach. They would seem to be one and the same. Slipping on the water, getting hurt on the shard. Either way, it's the same thing. Why does the Mishnah need two examples? Rather, the following is the way to understand the Mishnah. Thusly, the Mishnah is saying, not just two repeat examples, but something, but rather as follows. Someone slipped on the water as the water was falling. Or someone got hurt on the shard, on a shard after it had fallen. And this is the essentially the beginning of a long question. So we've established, as far as Abaye is concerned, an explanation for the Mishnah. Namely, that the Machlokes, Rabbi Meir, the Tanakama versus Rabbi Yehuda is on 2 points. On regarding one, damage that happens as the falling takes, as the item falls, damage that takes place after the item had already fallen. And now we ask, this is a long question, so that in order to come to the, let's say, for the question to come to the head, we have to wait a few lines. The Gemara says, "Umi demas nisin betarti," from the fact that the Mishnah that was found at the bottom of Daf Chof Chesam and Aleph is arguing on two, the Tanoim are arguing on 2 points. Braisa nami betarti, the Braisa as well that featured on this, the Braisa we're referring to is on Chof Ches Omid Beis, the Braisa that spoke about Nishbara Kado. You found at the bottom of Omid Beis, that continued at the top of our current Omid, that Braisa also, within its examples, are arguing on 2 points. So we say, from the fact that the Mishnah Betarti, so the Braisa also is Betarti. Bishlamo Kado, as far as the example concerning the pitcher, so which the Braisa featured Nishbara Kado Velo Silkoi, Mishkachas La'o Bishas Nefila, oh Li'achar Nefila. That could go either way. It could be the source of damage as the falling takes place, or after it had already fallen. Elo Gemolo. But as far as the camel, Bishlam Alachar Nefila Mishkachas La'o, I can envision the case of camel and the owner being responsible for damage that happens over the camel's body after it had fallen. How do you have that? B'mafkir nevelaso, where a person renounced ownership of the cadaver, or of the corpse, of the animal corpse, of the camel corpse. Ela b'shas nefila hechi mishkachas la. Where do you have culpability concerning the animal as causing damage as it falls? Let's take a look at Rashi together, a little less than halfway down, more or less where we left off. Ela b'shas nefila, hechi ika lemeimar niskal poshehu, mahu yocholasos im niskal behemto. As far as shas nefila that we spoke about earlier, we applied the analysis of niskal poshehu. That's where a person tripped and caused damage as he was falling. And the issue was, how do we look at someone who is niskal, someone who trips? So when it comes to the person himself, we can say the person's tripping was a function of his negligence. So we can see reason for holding him responsible. But what can a person do if his animal trips? The bishlam niskal hu v'nishbar kado ikul meimari b'alin mezal. I understand when a person is walking along carrying a jug and he trips, there's room to say that he was negligent. And we'd be able to understand Rabbi Yehuda, that is Rabbi Meir, who says is chayav. Ela gemolo miiko lemeimarki, but can you say the same thing about a camel falling? So we turn back to the Gemara. So we want to see how in the example of the Braisa concerning Nofal Gemolo v'lo Hamido, is there any possibility of explaining that as doing damage b'shas nefila? Omar, when I say explain that as doing damage, which will then hold the owner responsible to compensate. Omar Ravacha kigon de Avra b'maya derech saras adinara. We look at the Rashi here. Saras adinara shigodel nar v'chiso es ein aderech. The river sometimes swells and it covers the shores, the river shores, or the banks of the river. And you can't see the floor, the road, because the river had swollen. And he's considered acting irresponsible, for had the path been exposed, so the camel would not have tripped. Okay, so we're describing the case of animal falling and damage happening at the time it falls. In this, let's say, this scenario of the animal walking along a river's bank that has swollen. Well, heichi dami, what are the background circumstances? Idi kodake frina poshehu. If there is an alternative route that would have been a safe route, no water covering it, and you chose to use this flawed route, that's poshe, that's a straight out act of irresponsibility, of negligence. We wouldn't call that niskal, someone who tripped. This is more direct negligence, outright negligence. If you opted to use the dangerous route when you had an alternative route available. And if there's no alternative route, only this route was available, the route which was covered right now by water of the swollen river. Well, if that's the case, onesu. So that's a case of onus, and there'd be no basis for imagining any guilt, any culpability. Hello, Mishkachas La, the Iskil, Fiskila Be Gamla. The case is where a person fell on a regular dry land route, and his falling is a function of what we called before niskal. His falling is a function of his tripping, and niskal posheya. And the animal that was with him fell over him. So those are the circumstances of damage done by the camel, bishas nefila, that we can parallel to the explanation we saw in the Mishnah regarding niskal poshea, where the owner was niskal, he tripped, and the animal tripped over him. I just want to emphasize regarding this, the last point we made, the direction of guilt is based on the assumption that niskal tripping is considered poshea. Of course, we saw alternative opinions to that, that niskal is not poshea. Abaye earlier had explained the machlokas in the Mishnah on two points. The second point being damage caused after the item had already fallen. And the analysis surrounded the issue of mafkir nezokov, one who renounced ownership of the fallen item. Notice that we have an arrow in the space right to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. If you align this with the arrow above, you see it's pointing to that line. And being that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda were arguing over that point as well, namely Mafkir Nezokov, and Rabbi Yehuda mentioned in the Mishnah that there would be guilt on the part of the former owner, only b'miskavein. So we want to understand now what role does intent have in the case of Mafkir Nezokov. The Gemara. Mafkir Nezokov, my miskaven ika, what element of kavona is there when describing Mafkir Nezokov? The item already fell, and the owner renounced ownership over it, and then someone gets hurt or some damage results from that item, where does intent come into play? Omar Rav Yosef, b'miskaven lizkois b'charoseha. The person has intent to retain ownership of the shards. Now we take a look at the Rashi, lizkois b'charoseha, shelo hifkiron. He did not declare them unowned. He didn't renounce ownership, chayav. Then he'll be, according to Rabbi Huda, if someone gets damaged as a result of those shards, he'll be culpable. Ubishain miskaven shuv lizkois bohen, when he does not have any intent to gain ownership of it, potter de mafkir nizakov potter, because of concept of one who is mafkir, who renounces ownership of it, according to Reb Yehuda, so he will be exempt for damages that happen to it. And this, of course, is a reflection of Reb Yehuda's opinion that the boar that the Torah holds one responsible for is an owned boar, where you were mafkir, you declared unowned the surrounding property, but you retained ownership of the boar. In such a case where you renounced ownership, so there you will not be guilty, according to Reb Yehuda. So the element of miskaven is after the shards broke, you intended to retain ownership of them. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a house marking, and on the side, under our mivna, our structural note, the house marking appears, and we've written Divrei Rebbe Elias, Rebbe Lozer, Rebbe Yochanan. These are two Amoroyim. Mosai Kayim Machlokes HaTanoyim. Under what circumstances does the Machlokes Tanoyim arise? We had Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Huda. And up till now, we saw Abaye's approach to it, claiming that the Machlokes Tanoyim applies both b'shas nefila and lachar nefila. Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Yochanan will be discussing this. Under what circumstances is there a machlokas tanoim? Aleph b'shas nefila, beis la'achar nefila. At the time of falling, after the item already fell. The Gemara. Rabbi Lozer, Omar. B'shas nefila machlokas. There is a Tanaic controversy at the time of falling. Avol. Now, by hearing that statement of Rabbi Lozer, we then extrapolate. Avol li'achar nefilo mai. But after the fall took place, and then damage takes place, what would Rabbi Lozer, what does Rabbi Lozer hold? What does this Amora hold regarding the Tanoim? Divrei Hakoil Potter, do you mean to say then that everyone would agree there is exemption? V'ha Ika Rabbi Meir de Machayev, is there not Rabbi Meir's opinion that you would be held responsible for damage that happens achar nefila? And now Rashi, very importantly, just a couple lines up from here, says V'ika Rabbi Meir de Machayev. Midekotoni bebraisa, from the fact that in the braisa that started on Chav Chesom at Beis at the bottom, it said there, velo silka, velo hemido, you didn't remove the shards, you didn't remove the camel corpse. Michlaude behezek lachar nefila pligi. It must be that there is reference made in the braisa where Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda appear, or the Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim appear. And Rabbi Meir is holding that there is guilt, that one is chayev for nezek that happens after nefila. So how can we think to extrapolate from Rabbi Lozer, the Amora, his comment that the machlokis is b'shas nefila, leaving room to think that after nefila everyone would agree there's exemption, when Rabbi Meir wouldn't say that? Elamai. So what should we say? We continue in the Gemara. Divrei hakol chayev. By Rebbe Lozer saying that the machlokes is at the time of falling. Now, but after falling, everyone will agree that there is guilt. for damage that happens on the item after it had fallen. That's not true either. Vahoiko Rabbonon de Patri. The Rabbonon, though, they exempt for damage that happens after falling. That we saw very clearly by the Machlokas in the Mishnah, in the Braisa. Rabbi Meir was Machayev and the Chachamim exempted. And we are clearly talking about a case of damage that happened after the fall, after the item fell. So, what are we to make of Rebbe Lozer's comment when he said, "Bishas nefila machlokes"? Elo, my bishas nefila. What did Rebbe Lozer the Amora mean when he said, "Bishas nefila"? There is a machlokes af bishas nefila. Even bishas nefila, there is a machlokes. V'kol mashmalon kid de abaye, and Rebbe Lozer is telling us, just like we saw above, in the name of Abaye, that the Tarti Pligi, they argue the Machlokas Tanoim applies at the time of the fall, where damage happens as the fall is taking place, and where damage happens after the item fell. The Rashi adds a nice point of clarification. But let's look at it together. Five lines from the bottom. Af b'shas nefila, Rebbe Lozer the Amora is telling me, even b'shas nefila, there's a machlokas. What is Rebbe Lozer adding to our understanding of things? Very simply, umishum delishna de b'raisa lo mishtama b'shas nefila. The language of the b'raisa doesn't appear to be addressing a case of damage at the time of falling. It's necessary for the Amora Rebbe Lozer to inform us the Daikinon Lomi Masnisen, the Kotoni Tarti, Kidom Rabbi Eliel, that we analyze the Brisa based on our careful, precise reading of the Mishnah, that just like in the Mishnah, the Machlokes was on two points, Bishas Nefila and Achar Nefila, so too in the case of the Braisa. The language of the Braisa on a superficial level would lead us to think that the Machlokas was after Nefila, so Rebbe Lozer tells us not only after Nefila, but even at the time of the falling, there is a Machlokas. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. The Rebbe Yochanan, you can see he is marked with a house as well. Omar, Liachar, Nefila, Machlokes. The Machlokes between Rebbe Meir and the Chachomim is after the item fell, and then some damage takes place on that item. Avol, Bishas, Nefila, Mai. But damage that happens as the fall is taking place. That has to do with the issue of tripping, of niskal poshea. What are we to infer from the Rabbi Yochanan's comment that divrei hakol poter, everyone would agree that there is exemption? Notice we're starting a long question. Faha midikoma Rabbi Yochanan lekamon. But from the fact that Rabbi Yochanan says later on the following, quote, Lo temo masnisen Rabbi Meir hi d'yomar niskal posheahu. Don't say that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Meir, who holds tripping is negligence. Michlal de Rabbi Meir Mechayef. So you can see that the Tana Rabbi Meir, from Rabbi Yochanan's point, the Tana Rebbe Meir holds that tripping is an act of negligence, and that damage that happens at the time of falling, Rebbe Meir would hold one responsible for. So Rebbe Yochanan on the top line that said Le'achar Nefila Machlokes, how are we, on what basis should we conclude that B'shas Nefila everyone would agree exemption, when that's absolutely not true? Damage at the time of falling is a function of Niskal, a function of tripping, and Rebbe Meir, as you can see, Rabbi Yochanan himself acknowledges, Rabbi Meir holds you're guilty. Elamai. So then, what are we to extrapolate from Rabbi Yochanan's comment on the top line. He said there, after Nefila Machlokas. So, what about Bishas Nefila Elomai, Divrei Hakil Chayov? Are we to assume then that at the time of falling damage that happens, everyone would agree you are culpable for? That's not true either. Again, the same quote that we just had before. The fact that Rabbi Yochanan says later on the following, Lo temo masnisin Rabbi Meir hi diomar nizkal posheahu. Don't say that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Meir that holds tripping is poshea. Tripping is negligence. Michlal de patri rabbonon. You would be able to assume then that only Rabbi Meir holds that Niska Poshea, the Rabbonon who disagree with Rabbi Meir, would say it's not Poshea, and hence it's not an act of negligence. It's an event that took place beyond your control, and you would be exempt. So, once again, you can't infer from Rabbi Yochanan's comment at the top line that the machlokis is lachar nefila, but b'shas nefila, everyone would say you're guilty, when the Rabbonon wouldn't say that. What is Rabbi Yochanan's point then on the top line? Ela ha komash molon. Rabbi Yochanan is trying to tell us the following. De mafkir nizokov de hocha hu de patri rabbonon. The case of mafkir nizokov that we see here in our Mishnah, that is a case that the Rabbonin would say you are exempt for. Mafkir Nizokov, once again, is a situation where after the fall took place, you renounced ownership of whatever pieces or whatever element was there on the ground. Since the pieces came to the ground through ones circumstances, as the Gemara says, the Mafkir Nizokov case over here is where the Rabbonin exempt the Anusu. It's Anus because it started off by his tripping. So it started off as Ones, and through Ones circumstance, through circumstances beyond your control, which the Rabbonin hold you are called Anus for, things ended up on the floor. Avol. And under those circumstances, damage that takes place later on, you will be exempt for. Avol mafkir nizokov de alma, if a person knowingly threw some item onto the ground and then renounced ownership of it. In other words, it got to the ground deliberately. Mechaivi, the Rabbonon would hold you to be guilty. And the point of this response of the Gemara is to tell us that from the opening statement of Rabbi Yochanan, namely, Li'achar Nefila Machlokas, we are not coming to make an inference that B'sha'as Nefila there would be no Machlokas. That wasn't Rabbi Yochanan's agenda. All Rabbi Yochanan was trying to tell us is that Li'achar Nefila Machlokas, that only where the initial fall took place under circumstances of tripping, of an oinus, then you'll have a machlokas tanoim where the Rabbonin will say you're exempt. But if the circumstances of mafkir nizokov were a function of elements, items that came to the ground under through deliberate means, then the Rabbonin would not offer exemption for subsequent damage. Before we continue in the Gemara text, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, Hamafkir Nizokov, Machloikis Rabbi Yochanan Verbalozer. The Gemara will present a disagreement between Rabbi Yochanan Verbalozer concerning the general topic that we have been discussing till now, namely the idea of renouncing ownership of some item that will cause damage after it had fallen, after it landed on the ground. I say landed on the ground I don't want to restrict our discussion to fallen, as we will see in the Gemara. So we will see, though, a disagreement between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. If someone renounced ownership of an item on the ground, ichayev opoter, is he guilty for damages that the item causes or not? Hagemara tevarer masover kol echad. The Gemara will clarify what each one holds. Ubeezin esibos higia oisa chefetz hamazik lakarka. And under what circumstances did that item actually get to the ground? The item that causes the damage. In our previous discussion, we saw Rabbi Yochanan mention that the Rabbonan who argue with Rabbi Meir concerning Mafkir Nizokov, the Rabbonan will say that there is innocence, there is exemption from payment if the initial, if the item's initial contact with the ground was through ones. However, if the item was thrown deliberately on the ground and then damage resulted, even the Chachomim, who represent the more lenient opinion, will hold that there is guilt. That is as far as what we said up till now through Rabbi Yochanan. Now we continue in the Gemara. Itmar Mafkir Nizokov, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar. Actually, these are the two names that we had seen in our immediate previous discussion. We had them marked with houses. So these two, Amoroyim, Chanomar Chayov, Chanomar Potter. There is no... I should say there's no name associated at this point with who says what. All says Chadomar one thing and Chadomar something else. I think it's also worth noting that in the previous discussion, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan were serving as, we'll say, commentators on a machlokes tanoim. Here, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar are issuing a ruling. So now we continue in the Gemara. When I say issuing a ruling, they're talking on their own. They're not necessarily, they're not making some type of obvious reference to a machlokes tanoim. The question always is, where does each one get their opinion from? That we'll see as we go on in the Gemara. But in the meantime, we have a machlokes amoroyim concerning mafkir nizokov. Chanomar chayov, chanomar poter. One says that damage that results from renouncing ownership of items on the floor, on the public thoroughfare, one is guilty for damage that happens, and the other says you are exempt. Lema man de mechayev karebi meir uman de potar karabonon. Should we say that these two amoroyim are basically taking sides in a tanaic controversy? That he who says that there is culpability, that follows the opinion of Rabbi Meir. He who says that there is exemption follows the rabbonon. The Gemara says, no, that's not the analysis. I just hope that it's clear that when we make reference to Rabbi Meir and the Rabbonan or the Chachomim, we're referring to that which we saw at the bottom of Chof Ches Amid Beis, Rabbi, the last line regarding the jug that fell or the camel that fell. Rabbi Meir says, "Yer Chayef Behezekon," and the Chachomim said, "Potter." So this Amoraic disagreement would seem to parallel the Tanaic disagreement. The Gemara's response to that is no. That's not the analysis of these two Amoraic opinions. Aliba de Rabbi Meir kule alma lo pligi. Within the Tanaic opinion of Rabbi Meir, everyone is in agreement that Mafkir Nizokov would be chayev. And the reason for that is As far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, mind you, where after a fall, which you could have considered that an example of onus, if after a fall that happened beyond your control, items fell, and you declared them unowned, you renounced ownership of them, Rabbi Meir holds you are culpable for any damage that results thereafter, certainly where you deliberately were mafkir your items, the items, willingly at the outset. In other words, certainly in a case where the circumstances behind the item getting to the ground were not through onus. So, as far as Rabbi Meir's approach to Mafkir Nezokov, there would be no Amoraic controversy as how he would rule on that matter. Ki pligi aliba derabbanan. The Machlokis Amoroyim between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan arises within the opinion of the Rabbanan. Man de potar k'rabbanan, he who says there is exemption holds like the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan that we saw already said there's exemption for one who renounces ownership of items that that he owned and are on the ground that caused damage, but you renounced ownership of them. That's what the Rabbanan said. You're exempt from needing to compensate for resultant damage. So the Amora here, once again, we don't know who says what. That the Gemara will try to clarify later. But he who exempts is in the spirit of the Rabbanan. Uman demechayev, the Amora that says chayev, Omar loch, he will tell you. Anodi amri afilu Rabbanan, my opinion of guilt is within the context of the Rabbanan. Ad kan lo pachi Rabbanan elo b'mafkir nezokov d'hocha. The Rabbanan mentioned innocence, exemption from need to compensate in a case of mafkir nezokov, but that's in this over here, in this specific case. In other words, here in the Brisa, mishum d'anasu, the item got to the ground because of initial a situation of oinus, something beyond your control. You tripped. The item fell to the ground. You declared it unowned. Avol mafkir nezok of the alma, but declaration of or renouncement of ownership in general, mechayvi. The rabbanon would mechayev for that. So that the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, you can see in this discussion, concerns someone who deliberately was mafkir an item, leaving it on the ground. Someone could trip over it and get hurt. Damage can result. That very case appears to be a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. Up till now, we've noted or even emphasized that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar are arguing over Mafkir Nezokov, one holding Chayev, one holding Potter, but we didn't attach a particular name to a particular ruling. At this point, the Gemara attempts to accomplish exactly that. Tistayim, let us conclude, the Rabbi Elazar hu de Omar Chayav, that Rabbi Elazar is the opinion that holds Mafkir Nezokov is Chayav is obligated to compensate for any resultant damage. Why should we conclude that thusly? De Omar Rabbi Elazar Mishum Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Elazar, quoting Rabbi Shmuel, says, "Shnei dvorim einon b'rishusa shel adam v'asana kosuv ki'ilu hein b'rishusa." There are two things that are not owned by an individual, and yet the Torah regards it as if it is yours personally. V'elu hein. The following are the two. Number one, bor b'rishusa rabim. a pit that you dug in a public thoroughfare. Obviously, you don't own it, yet you are held responsible for damage that takes place over there. And number two, which is not very relevant, it's not relevant to our discussion, but number two is V'chometz Mishei Shoyes Ulamalo on Erev Pesach on the 14th of the month of Nisan. Erev Pesach, Chometz is prohibited from the sixth hour of the day onwards, from noon onwards. At that point, the chometz is osur b'hanoy. You're not allowed to benefit from the chometz. It's not then yours, and yet you are held responsible for keeping possession, for maintaining possession of chometz, so that even though it's not yours, it's nevertheless considered yours. But we want to focus on what Rebbe Lozer is saying concerning the bor b'shus harabim. Regarding this, Rashi says, "Bor b'shus harabim almos svirale le Rebbe Lozer." Rebbe Lozer holds the chiyuva de bor b'shus harabim he, the obligation of the Torah, for compensating for damage caused by a pit is the case of a pit that you do not own. So that even though you don't own it, you are responsible for damage it causes. Likewise, you renounced ownership of an item, you are nevertheless held responsible to compensate for damage. This is then a seemingly clear conclusion. Tis tayim, so let us conclude thusly. We are going to be in for surprises by the end of the sugya, but in the meantime, this appears to be a conclusion. In fact, we have a bracketed section now. It's a long bracketed section. If we skip it initially, it enables us simply to maintain a certain logical flow of the Gemara. So at this point we said, Tistayim, that Rebbe Lozer holds guilty. Then what about Rebbe Yochanan? So now skip the brackets momentarily. We're at the lower part of the narrow lines. Umida Rebbe Lozer Omar Chayov, from the fact that Rebbe Lozer holds Mafkir Nizok of his Chayov, Rebbe Yochanan Omar Potter. Rebbe Yochanan, who was the one who disagreed with Rebbe Lozer, he would say, innocent, exempt from compensating. Throughout this Gemara, you'll notice a diamond marking that appears on the side of the under the Mivneh. These diamonds are kushyos. They represent questions, challenges, alha dekova ha-Gemara, regarding that which the Gemara concludes, the Rebbe Lozer Mechayev b'mafkir nezokav v'shir Rebbe Yochanan poter, that Rebbe Lozer is the one that holds you are culpable, and Rebbe Yochanan holding you are exempt. I say there are surprises in life. And just to point out, since we're not reading a novel, but we're studying Gemara, so the issue of remaining in suspense is not necessarily something we want to achieve. Skip for a moment to the bottom line of the Gemara, where it says, "Eloyilom Rabbi Yochanan Marchayev." After all is said and done, Rabbi Yochanan is the one that's going to come out saying Chayev. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev, Rabbi Lozer Amar Poter. And then Rabbi Lozer is the one that's going to come out saying exempt. The Gemara will raise a question on that very last point, but the question is essentially answered very quickly. So you can see that by the time you get to the end of this discussion, everything's going to flip around. In the meantime, though, we have a lot of work ahead of us. So we go back to the beginning of the bracketed section. At that point, the Gemara concluded from the fact that Rebbe Lozer, in quoting Rabbi Shmuel, said, there are two things that are not really in your possession, and yet you're held responsible for it. One of them being bor b'shus harabim. You dug a pit, or you uncovered a pit, in a public thoroughfare. Obviously, you don't own the pit. in that sense, it's parallel to the case of renouncing, mafkir nezok, of renouncing ownership of an item, and yet you're held responsible for damage that results. So it would appear then that Rebbe Lozer is our candidate for the one that said chayav. We said at the beginning of this section, chad omer chayav, chad omer poter, the chad omer chayav would be associated right now with Rebbe Lozer. We now ask a question. We start the bracketed section. We should note, by the way, a starred note on the side. So, Graham Lashem Dilug, Kedei Lishma Retzach HaChashiva. These brackets are for skipping purposes, and we already demonstrated that. Besocha Sograim, within the bracketed section, HaGemara Menaseh Litchois HaModis Rebelozer, the Gemara is going to attempt to reject the establishing of Rebelozer, the Mafkin Nezok of Chayav. It's going to try to reject our conclusion. But by the time we get to the end of the bracketed section, this attempt is not going to work. I pointed out earlier, though, however, by the end of the sugya, we are going to discover that Rebbe Lozer is in fact the one that says exempt. So now we turn back to the Gemara text. With a question. Notice it's a long question. Umi Omar Rebbe Lozer Hachi. Would Rebbe Lozer really have said thusly, namely, that Mafkir Nezokov is Chayov? V'ho Omar Rebbe Lozer Ipcho. But Rebbe Lozer is on record as saying to the contrary. Disnan. First we have a Tanaic source, and Rebbe Lozer, the Amora, will follow. Ha-hofech es ha-golo b'shus ha-rabim. Hofech is to flip around. To flip over a golo. Golo is dung, or feces, animal feces, in a public thoroughfare. And we should point out that Rashi says regarding this, he flipped it around, moving it from one spot to another. Vehuzak b'hen acher, and someone got experienced damage. As a result of this garbage, chayov benisko, the initial party has to compensate. Rashi says chayov benisko. Rashi further up on in the narrow lines, he says dekanya b'hagba, by flipping it over, you acquired it, umamoinu, and becomes your possession. So a person's obligated to compensate things that his own items, his own possessions, damaged. We continue in the Gemara. V'yomer Rebbe Lozer lo shanu. This teaching that you're chayav for benisko, this is limited. Elo shenisgavein lizko isbohen, where you had intent to acquire it. When you picked up that garbage, that golol, you picked it up, because you had intent to acquire it, so the damage that results is damage from your possessions, your own possessions. Even though you placed it back down on the ground at some later point, you didn't renounce ownership of it. You had intention to pick it up at some later point, as Rashi explains. So Rebbe Lozer says, Rebbe Lozer Amora says, that guilt or culpability for making restitution is where you intended to acquire the golol. Avoloinis kaven liskois bohen potter. But if you had no intent of acquiring it, you would be exempt. Rashi adds. Let's look at Rashi together. A few lines up from here. Potter viafagav de kora bor. Kora means dig. For our purposes, we're going to say create. V'yafav dekora bor b'shus harabim k'shav chay v'niskal ha'odam b'mokim shezarko isham. Even though you caused the bor, the element that is responsible for the damage, for the stumbling, for the damage that results, even though you created a bor by flipping over that garbage and throwing it down at some other place, and then that second spot is where the person experienced the damage. Had you not moved it from its original spot so that victim wouldn't have become a victim. Alma the Rebbe Lozer, we see from this, according to Rebbe Lozer, Bor Birshus Rabim Potter. Rebbe Lozer said that the all of the guilt is only if you intended to acquire it. Had you not intended to acquire it, even though you in effect created a bor in a public thoroughfare, you would be exempt. V'adin l'mafkir nizokov. And by the same token, if you declared your items unowned, you renounced ownership of your items and they caused damage. The Haman, the Mechayev, he who holds that there is culpability in the case of Mafkir Nezokov, Mibor B'Shus Rabbi Olaf Law, he learns it from the case of Bor B'Shus Rabim. Shelo, Hoysa, Shelo, Me'olam, something that wasn't yours ever. And yet, that opinion says you're Chayev. So, as far as Rebbe Lozer is concerned, that says there's culpability only if you intended to gain ownership over it, Alma, we turn back to the Gemara, Alma Mafkir Nizokov Potter, regarding renounced ownership over items and then damage results, Rebbe Lozer would say you're exempt. So at this point we have a question. How can you say before that Rebbe Lozer represents the opinion of guilt, of obligation, of chiyuv, to make restitution in the case of Mafkir Nizokov, when here you see that Rebbe Lozer would say you are exempt from needing to make restitution? We can look at the side under our Mivne, our structural note, a triangle appears, as they will appear in the Gemara. Tshuvos, these are answers, Lakushya, Shehiksho, Mehamoku, Shofer, Golo. We raised a question from this Tanaic source of Hoifech Esagolo. Vinomar, and we'll end up saying, Shebederech klal Rebbe Lozer mechayev amafkin nizokov. In general, Rebbe Lozer holds, like we concluded before the brackets, that Rebbe Lozer says there is culpability in the case of mafkir nizokov. Tam shim lo is kavin liskos poter. Why then did Rebbe Lozer say by hoifech esagolol, if you didn't intend to acquire it, you would be exempt? Let's continue in the Gemara. Omar of Ado Bravi, you want to know why you're exempt? Why in the case of Hoifech Gola, Rebbe Lozer says you're exempt? Shehechziro lemakoma. The Gola that you picked up, the garbage that you picked up, you put back in its original spot. In other words, you didn't change any circumstances. If you restored it to its original spot, in other words, you didn't place it down at some other location, but rather where it initially was, you didn't dig the bore, so to speak. The bore, once again, means something that that causes damage through people tripping over it. And therefore, it's as if you didn't touch it at all, and that's why there, in this case, there would be exemption. Omar Ravina, Moshal Dravada Barava Lema Dovodema, an analogy to Rav Ado's answer, Lemotse Bor Megula, imagine someone walking along, finds an exposed pit, Vichiso covers it, Vichozar Vigileo, and then exposes it. He would be guilt-free, he would be exempt from any resultant damage. Why? Because after all is said and done, you didn't change the original status. Question. Note that we have a long question here. Omar le morzutra brei de Rabbi Mori, the breidim of Mori le Ravina, me dummy. How can you compare the fellow walking by and covering and then re-exposing a pit to the case of the golo? Hasam, in the case of the person chancing upon an exposed pit and then covering it, lo istalik lu maisa rishon. The original digging was never removed. It was always there. Hacha, when he picked up the golo, when he picked up the garbage, at that moment, istalik lumaisa rishon, the original presence of the golol on the floor was no longer in existence. So the analogy that Ravina tried to make is simply inaccurate. You want to make analogies? Lo domi elo lo motzi bor megula v'tomima v'chozer v'chofra. If you want to make analogies to a traditional pit, then I'll tell you it's like this. You're walking along and you find an exposed pit. By the way, at this point, they're still the same. This is the same as Ravina. You find an exposed pit. However, v'tomima, you sealed the pit by filling it up with earth. You sealed it in that sense. V'chozer v'chofra, and then you redug it. D'istalku l'maisa rishon v'kaim ala birshuso. At the point that you filled it up with dirt, so the original pit is no longer there. And then when you redug it out, leaving it exposed, it's yours. It's kaim ala birshuso. It means it becomes like yours, it's your action, and you're therefore chayav. Therefore, picking up the golol, at the point you picked up the golol no longer poses any danger to anyone. So the original placing of it there is gone. When you put it back down, it's as if you made the pit. And as such, you wouldn't be potter. I want to emphasize here, we're working on this analogy level. So if you want to make analogies to explain the Rav Ado's, illustrate Rav Ado's point, you're going to come out with a legal ruling that runs counter to what we were trying to illustrate. We're trying to illustrate why is the case of Hoifech es Agolo, if you don't have intent to acquire it, you are exempt. So Rav Ada said, you know why you're exempt? Because you put it back in the same spot you originally found it. But if you're going to start making analogies to a pit, like Ravina does, you're going to end up with an analogy which would indicate that you would be chayav to make restitution. Therefore, Rav Ashi, Elo Amar Rav Ashi, explains what happened in the case of the Golol in order to understand why Rebbe Lozer says you would be innocent, you'd be potter, in a case that you don't have kavana to acquire it. What happened in the case of the Golol? Up till this point, we said if you had picked it up at that point, and then placed it down, you would, through the analogy to the case of the boar, you would end up being chayav. So Elo Amar Rav Ashi, kishehofcha lepochos mishloisha. That which Rebbe Lozer said you are exempt when you do not have kavona to acquire, you picked it up less than three tfachim, less than three hand breaths off the ground. We take a look at Rashi. Elo Amar Rav Ashi, ha demuki Rebbe Lozer lemasnisin hocha. Lonis kaven luskois ba potter. That which Rebbe Lozer explained regarding the Tanaic source of Hoifech es Agolo, where you did not have kavona to acquire it, you would be exempt. Kishahavcha lepochos mishlosha. The mitchila lo higbia shlosha. At the outset, you never picked it up more than three hand breaths. Hilkoch lav hagbo hi. Therefore, it's not considered as if you picked it up. When items remain within three tfochim of the ground, it's considered as if it's attached to the ground. The kibor posuach domi velonista mabor mi'olam. Making the analogy back to the case of the pit, it's like chancing upon an open pit and not sealing it up ever. V'kevon delo niskaving the knoisa. And since you have no intent to acquire it, the leka lechiyuve mashum mamono. Therefore, you can't hold him guilty on grounds that it's his own item, it's his mamon. Mishum kiribur nami lo techaive. As far as guilt for digging out a pit, we can't hold him responsible for that either. However, where you had intention to acquire it, mechayev mishum mamono. You are chayev because of your mamon, your own items that cause damage. As far as acquisition is concerned, that could be achieved, technically speaking, even without picking it up. And that's featured in Maseches Bava Metzia and Beperek HaBayis for Leah. Bayis is the name of the perek over there. So to take stock of what we've said so far, basically, Rebbe Lozer holds that Mafkir Nezokov is chayav for resultant damage. As far as Rebbe Lozer's comment regarding the Hoifech Golo, where he said that the guilt featured in that Tanaic source is only if you had kavana to acquire, you had intent to acquire it. But if you had no intent to acquire it, you would be guilt-free, which led us to believe that Mafkir Nezokov, according to Rebbe Lozer, is reason for exemption. Well, Ravada tried to explain that you put it back into its original spot. We saw that that would not be that wouldn't be an effective explanation. Rav Ashi says that he picked it up, but keeping it within three tefachim of the ground. Since he kept it within three tefachim of the ground and had no intention of acquiring it, he in effect did nothing. Well, for doing nothing, so obviously you're exempt for any damage that results. And that's in clear distinction to a case of someone putting something on the ground and then declaring it, renouncing ownership of it. There he clearly did something that is of significance. We continue in the Gemara. Umay doichake de Rebbe Lozer. What pressed Rav Ashi. What pressed Rav Ashi, who comes to explain Rebbe Lozer. So Rav Ashi, who's coming to explain Rebbe Lozer, to say, who set up the case of the Golol. Leukme means to establish the case of the Golol Kagon Shahavcha Lepachos Mishloisha, where the individual picked it up with, but not more than three handbreadths, leaving within three handbreadths of the ground. V'taimo dechineskavin lizkoispa, and the reason that there's chiv, there's obligations, because you had intent to acquire it. Ha ein miskavin lizkoispa lo, however, had you had no intent to acquire it, you would remain exempt from any damages. Lukma lemala mishlosha. Why not set up the case where he picked it up more than three tefachim? V'afalgav delo niskaven lizkoispa chayov. And even without intent to acquire it, you still would be chayov. After all, did we not say that Rebbe Lozer holds Mafkir Nezokov is Chayav? In other words, according to Rav Ashi's explanation, the whole reason that Rebbe Lozer the Amora offers exemption in the case of Golol is because you had no intent to. Culpability in the Tanaic source regarding Golol is because you had intent to acquire. Why say it that way? Could you not have simply had the individual picking up the Golol more than three tefachim, even without intent to acquire? There still would be guilt. Actually, the case of Lamalo Mishlosha, we pointed out earlier, indicates that when you eventually put it down, you are making the pit. Within three tefachim, we explained earlier, it's as if you did nothing. It remains attached to the ground. But by picking up more than three tefachim, you are, as far as action-wise, you are now doing something. Certainly when you place it back down, you've done something. However, we seem to place emphasis before in Rebbe Lozer's explanation of the chiyuv as a result of having kavona liskos. Why emphasize kavona liskos, intent to acquire? You could have had set up the situation of guilt where he picks it up more than three tefachim, even without intent to acquire. After all, Rebbe Lozer was set up before as holding mafkir nizakov is chayav. Omar Rava masnisin kishisei. The wording of the Mishnah was difficult. In other words, the wording of the Mishnah forced Ravashi into this position. My iria hofach. Why does it speak in terms of hofach, that using that word? Lisni higbia. If this suggestion would be acceptable, that it was raised more than three tvachim, then the language would have been higbia. Why did the source use the word hofach? Elo shma mino kol hofach lamato mishloshahu. The word hofach indicates that it was raised less than three tvachim. And as we said before, therefore it's not considered as if you did anything. And only if you had intent to acquire it would you be held guilty. Otherwise, without intent to acquire, and leaving it within three tefachim of the ground, you've done nothing. But mafkir nizakov in general, that's chayav, according to Rebbe Lozer. Umidu Rebbe Lozer Omar Chayav, from the fact that Rebbe Lozer is the one that says mafkir nizakov is chayav, then the one who argued with them, namely Rabbi Yochanan Mar Potter, he would be the one that said exempt. Question. We've already indicated that this diamond is here to pose a question on whatever conclusion we're reaching till this point. So we just said that Rabbi Yochanan holds exempt. Well, is that so? Umi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi. Take note of the long question marking. The Hotnan. We have a Tanaic source which says Hamatznias Hakoitz Vesaschuchis. One who hides away. Who Matznia is to put something away, to hide away, to cover. A coat, a thorn, Zchuchis, glass. And Rashi adds, in the public thoroughfare. Vagoder gidro bekoitzim, one who sets up a fence made of thorns. Vagoder shenofal shusarabim, or a fence made of stones that falls into a public thoroughfare. Vahuzak bohen acher, and someone is injured in any of these items. Chayav benizko, one is obligated to compensate. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan lo shonu elo b'mafriach. Rabbi Yochanan says that the one who made a fence of thorns and someone got hurt on it, that is true only if you were mafriach. What's mafriach? Rashi says the thorn tips elo b'mafriach roish kaitzesev shesarabim. You had the tips of your thorn fence sticking into the public thoroughfare. Davilei bor b'shusarabim. You have made the equivalent of a bor in a public thoroughfare. Avol b'metzamtzem potter. But, as the Gemara says, avol b'metzamtzem potter means, Rashi, we read again from the Rashi, avol b'metzamtzem tzimon l'soich shelo. Davilei bor b'shuso. If the tips of the thorns, you know, as you built the fence in such a way that the tip of the thorn remained in your own private property. That would be the equivalent of a bore of a pit in your own property. V'afagav dehifkir rishuso, even though you subsequently declared unowned, you renounced ownership of your property, of your ground, shiktseu rishuso rabim, because by building the fence further onto your property, you were in effect demonstrating that your property goes till the fence. Now it's true that the outer ground that's outside the fence is still, technically speaking, your property, but since you set it up further into on your property, you enabled the public to walk up till that point. So it's as if you dedicated your property to the public. Nevertheless, damage that happens in that case. By people rubbing into the tips of the thorns, you would be exempt. Mitzamsei maitaima poter. Why are you considered? Why are you exempt from damages in the case that you had set the fence up further into your property, the thorn fence? Lav mishum dehaviole bor bushuso. Is it not because it would be considered a bor in your own property? And as we explained earlier, we just saw in the Rashi, bor b'rishus was a case where you retain ownership, the fence you retain ownership of, the surrounding area you declared, you renounced ownership of it, you gave it to the public. That's called bor b'rishus. Michlau, we can see from here, we infer that the chiyuv of the bor, the obligation of the Torah for compensating for damage caused by pits or other sources of damage, bor of the Torah is birshus harabim hu. It's only a pit that's in the public thoroughfare. Almo. Well, what do we see from this? Mafkir nizok of chayov. If you renounce ownership of your items, that's in effect a bor in a public thoroughfare. You've renounced ownership of the item in the public thoroughfare. That would be chayov. Now, who is saying all of this? Rabbi Yochanan is saying all of this. So it comes out then that the attempt to conclude that Rabbi Yochanan holds Mafkir Nezokov is exempt, not so. Lo. Incorrect. Li'oilom e'moloch Mafkir Nezokov poter. I will tell you that a person who is Mafkir Nezokov renounces ownership of his items in the public. They are, and damage results, Rabbi Yochanan holds you're exempt. Bor b'rishuso, though, that you would be chayav for. Well, if that's the case, if bor b'rishuso you would be chayav for, then what about the case of the thorn fence that you built within your own property? Umetzamsei my time a potter. Why then in the case of Metzamsei would you be potter? That would be a case of bor b'rishuso. A bor, a source of damage on your property. Answer. Mishum di itmar alomer of acha brei deravika. It has been taught concerning that case by Rav Acha. It's not the normal way of people to rub into walls. And someone who rubbed into a wall and hurt himself and or experienced damage, he did something unusual. As far as mafriach, why if we're saying that Mafkir Nezokov is in fact punter according to Reb Yochanan, and only Bor Birshuso would be Chayav. Why is Mafriach the Kaitzim that's extending the tips of the thorn fence into the public thoroughfare? Why are you held guilty for that? So Rashi explains that's because it's your mumon. You weren't mafkir the fence. You didn't renounce ownership of the fence. So it's your mumon that's causing public damage causing damage to the public, so you have to compensate for that. Let's continue. Umi Omer Rabbi Yochanan Hachi, would Rabbi Yochanan really have said thusly that Mafkir Nezakov is exempt? V'ho Omer Rabbi Yochanan Locha Kistam Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan says we rule like the unnamed Mishnah, the Mishnah, the we'll say nameless Mishnah, the Mishnah that says as follows: Utnan Achoifer Bor Brishus Rabim, someone who digs a pit out in a public thoroughfare. V'nofal L'toich L'shor Chamor U'Meis, and an ox or a donkey falls into this pit and dies, Chayav, the one who dug the pit must compensate. Well, yeah, this is a clear example of Bor B'Shus HaRabim. This is a pit that's dug in the public thoroughfare, and you are held, and Rabbi Yochanan rules you are held responsible for damage that happens there. So Mafkir Nezakov, one who declares, renounces ownership of his items in the public thoroughfare, that's Bor B'Shus HaRabim. That's a source of damage that you are leaving in a public thoroughfare. So Mafkir Nezakov, according to Rabbi Yochanan's ruling, would be Chayav. That's not what we've been claiming Rabbi Yochanan's opinion to be till this point. In fact, Rabbi Yochanan says Mafkir Nezakov is Chayav. Oh, my Rabbi Yochanan, Chayav, Rabbi Lozer, my Potter. In fact, Rabbi Yochanan says you're Chayav. The one who was arguing with him, namely Rabbi Lozer, he would have to say exempt. Ah, but above, in fact, right before the bracketed section above, the Omer Rabbi Lozer, we continue to the top of Daf Lamed. Mishum Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Lozer above had quoted Rabbi Yishmael saying that there are two things that are not in your possession that the Torah views as if you're responsible for, and one of them was Bor B'Shus HaRabim. So Rabbi Lozer holds that Mafkir Nezakov is guilty. How then can we say now that Rabbi Lozer would say exempt? The Gemara answers very simply, Lo kashya hadi day, had the rabbi. Rabbi Lozer before was quoting Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael was rabbi, his teacher, a previous authority. Take note of the star that you see to the right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can indicating Chof Tesom and Beis. You can align that with the star back on Chof Tesom and Beis, where you see Rebbe Lozer is quoting someone else. Yes, Rabbe, his teacher's opinion, Hadidei, Hadi Rabbe, is that his own opinion is, in fact, Rebbe Lozer says, Mafkir Nezakov is Putter. Rabbe, Rabbi Shmuel, that he was quoting earlier, his opinion, it's not Rebbe Lozer's own opinion, it's Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, that Mafkir Nezakov, in fact, would be Chayav, just like the case of Bor B'Shus HaRabim that Rabbi Shmuel holds you are Chayav for. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.